everybody, to another edition of the NerdWatch podcast. I, of course, am G-Money, and I am joined by five other scrapping men. And we're going to do a podcast about not only Maui Comic-Con, but about Darkwing Duck, because I am joined by three of, I guess you could say, influential people in the world of Darkwing Duck. I am joined by Aaron Sparrow, Mr. James Silvani, and Mr. Tad Stone, the creator of Darkwing Duck, along with the two other jabronis, the owner of Maui Comics, the guy who only put on Maui Comic-Con, Alika, and, of course, Todd Bernardi. No, I'm just kidding. No, Todd Bernardi, local comic book artist extraordinaire of the Kukui Project. Well, let's get right into it because we don't have much time. Gentlemen, welcome to the show. How are you guys doing?
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for having us.
Well, listen, it's a very interesting night because it's not only it's an honor to have you guys in the house, but it's also election night, so there's a lot of activity going around.
It's 20% Tuesday.
Yes, it's also 20% Tuesday.
That's the important part.
And full price Comic Book Wednesday will be tomorrow. Yeah. It's a very interesting night. You guys, or Tad, is ready to fly back home to California tonight. So
I will be using a jet.
The Thunderquack, right? Yeah.
Well, gentlemen, first off, since you guys were at Maui Comic Con, I hope you guys had a good time.
Don't ask him on air.
Oh. I hope we have left you with at least some decent impressions of our lovely, what we call our Ina, our home. And I hope that you guys enjoyed your stay, and I hope you guys enjoyed the con. So, let's start with Aaron first. Did you enjoy the concert?
I did. I didn't know what to expect, but you know, when you say like you're going to get a free trip to Maui, I don't ask many questions. the con itself was amazing. I was really taken aback by just how friendly and welcoming the community here on Maui is. We had a lot of fans come out to the show. So. It was a really great experience, and unlike some of your bigger cons, it was like a really intimate kind of fan experience. We got time to sit and talk to a lot of the people that came out, and really form a nice bond with the people that came to see us. So couldn't be happier.
Very cool. What about you, Mr. Silvani, sir? You are a local resident as well.
Yeah.
But also
a con expert. This guy is like.
Yeah, you're at cons all over the place. I hope you enjoyed the Maui Comic Con.
Maui Comic Con was a fantastic experience. I had a really great time. It was fun because I do a lot of events here on Maui. The Free Comic Book Day I did here. I did at the Kihei Library. And you meet a few of the fans, but to in a Comic-Con situation like we had over at the Lahaina Cannery Mall was really unique and a lot of fun. I look forward to next year.
Fantastic. And Mr. Tad Stones, the creator of Darkwing Duck, I hope you had a good time. What was your experience?
Oh, yes, I'll have to make it a threefer right here. Maui Comic-Con, one of the best Comic-Cons ever on the island of Maui. Tonight we have to talk a lot faster so we can add more content in a very short amount of time.
Don't worry.
It was wonderful. Everybody was personable. We had lots of fans. Fans came in. We sold original art. We sold books, magazines, and part of our souls.
And you can tell the one guy that needs to get out of here on time is the one that's talking the fastest. Tad and I, ironically enough, within the last 15 minutes have grown closer together than we ever have because of what's happening this evening.
He got Trump all over
me. I think you might be the only Trump vote in the room.
I might be.
On the island.
On the island of Maui, maybe. No, that's not true. I know a couple Trump votes.
I might be. Well, listen, unfortunately.
You're like Rick in The Walking Dead. I got a tie on my hand. Do it! Just do it!
Hey, we're nice people. Come on. Anyway, unfortunately, at the con, we were able to record the show, your panel. We weren't able to record it, the audio for the panel. So something had happened. There was a little mishap. But what I would like to do is take just the next few minutes to go over some of what people may have missed at the con and the 25th anniversary of Darkwing Duck, if that's okay with you guys.
I heard that was like a crazy panel.
I'm telling you what.
I didn't get to see the whole thing.
Without a doubt, it was my favorite panel of the night because Tad has a life after being a creator and an artist. he's an internet troll.
so, your kind of guy.
He's my kind of guy.
I thought he was going to say, he has a life after death.
No. But of course, as we all know, Mr. Tad Stones is the creator of Darkwing Duck. We're celebrating his 25th anniversary. So just a little quick overview, Tad. What is it that brought you onto this project? What was the I guess you could say, what harnessed that imagination you needed to come up with Darkwing Duck?
Well, the boss ordered me to do it.
Wait. Who in this room was paying my salary? Oh, you. Well, yes, I'll do what you say. That's pretty much how it was.
Oh, fantastic.
Now, Jeffrey Katzenberg, who was at Disney at the time, later on went to start DreamWorks, along with Steven Spielberg and David Geffen, said, I want you to do a show called 00 Duck, because he happened on a DuckTales episode of the same name. And back then, when there's a lot of animated cartoons coming out, he and Eisner, you know, really believed that the name of a show gives it an extra lift. You know, that's the, if you're just trying to get people to check out your show, and then the show has to be good to keep the audience. And he thought 00 Duck was a, you know, a great name. I thought it just sounded like a James Bond parody. And I said, it's just parody. This is way before Austin Powers. It's got no Disney heart. It's got no sense of family. But I went ahead and did it. I did all the typical, you know, spy parody stuff, you know, Q and, you know, vehicles and all of that. And I showed him the pitch, and he said, this is just a spy parody. It's got no Disney heart. It's got no sense of family. Do it over. So basically, I did what I should have done the first time, which is, you know, you shouldn't be pitching something you don't believe in, because it's obviously going to show in the material. So I dived into, you know, we had a lot of the spy stuff there, but to make it more interesting, I started thinking about, like, Doc Savage. He used to have a team that worked with him, a lot of specialists. So for a while, there was no launch pad. It was Darkwing had a backup group of specialists. So we started developing it, and we start thinking of Green Hornet and the Shadow. Obviously, I'm the Terror that Flaps in the Night was our homage to the Shadow thing. And it's like, right, he's going to say that in every episode. Then, you know, you let things grow organically. You know, we've got creative people working on it. And, you know, it started coming together. And we said, you know what? This is too many people. And we started honing down that team. And, you know, Launchpad, since he was in the original 00 Duck episode, he was always there in our mind. And it seemed like with this personality we're coming up with 00 Duck, he'd be a good foil. Mm. But the show really didn't sell internally until we were saying, what if Batman had a little girl who refused to stay at home? And that was Gosselin, his adopted daughter. And that's what gave the show heart. And, you know, so suddenly we had a show. You know, it was a, they loved it, and it went out, and they made little pins that said 00 Duck and posters that said 00 Duck. And it went to the big syndication thing and started taking orders on it. And then the people who own the rights to James Bond said, yeah, 00 isn't a thing. It's ours. You know, it's not generic. We own those words, and you can't use them. So we had a contest internally for a prize of $500 just for the name, you know, rename 00 Duck. And we had Deadshot Duck and Deadeye Duck and Dangerous Duck and Danny Duck and all sorts of things.
Danny Duck, the pipes are calling.
Anyway, it was won by a writer and story editor, Alan Burnett, who came up with Darkwing. And it was one of those, you know, slap your forehead moments because of Nightwing, of course. But what I said is, that is an awesome name, but let's put Duck with it, because that's the adventure, and then the duck makes it sillier sounding, which is pretty much our show. And so we got the name Darkwing Duck, and Alan Burnett got $500 left to go to Warner Brothers, where he was the first story editor of the Batman animated series. Yeah. And Bruce Timm said Alan was the first guy who understood what they were trying to do, and he's been one of the head people at Warner Brothers ever since. So we figured we kind of warmed him up.
I said at the con that when he said that, I was in shock, number one. And number two, What Tad just said is that Darkwing Duck inspired Batman the Animated Series.
So Darkwing.
So Darkwing.
Hence, that's greater than Batman the Animated Series.
That's correct, sir.
I think when you tell that story from now on and you mention Alan Burnett, you should say that after naming Darkwing, he just was never heard from again. We don't know what happened to him. I wish him well.
Here's a little bit of trivia that I haven't told these guys before. I actually took a pitch from Bob Kane.
What?
That back at Disney, and this is before Disney TV, it was just, and I don't know why they called on me, but Bob Kane he did a cartoon show called Courageous Cat and Minute Mouse, and I think that's what he pitched, but at the time we didn't have Disney TV animation, and it was just not something we were into, but he was there, and, you know, in all his glory as the creator of Batman, and pitched the show, and it was like that was kind
crazy.
Of unreal. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
So that was just a little hidden archive, and you heard it first here on NerdWatch. Bob King.
When you had met Bob, how old was Bob at that time?
The man was ageless.
He was. Gonna say.
I don't know. You know, now I feel differently, but when you're young, at past a certain age, it's like, oh, he's like 112, right? You
know? Easily.
So a lot of very jet black hair, as I recall.
So now you've gone through this. We all know, we all being lovers of of Darkwing Duck, and of course some of your other creations, which are one of my favorites, Chippendale's Rescue Rangers, which I absolutely love. How did you get James and Aaron, or I should say, what was it like getting in touch with Tad, Aaron, and James about doing Darkwing or furthering his adventures in the comics? Because as we all know, at the con, Tad was telling us a story about it went three seasons, and it went longer than the majority of Disney's cartoons that were on TV.
It's only three seasons.
You know, well, the story is from Tad. I think he tells it better than I would, but you get 65 episodes. Is that right, Tad, you said?
Yeah, well, it's not. It's a business plan. So DuckTales got more episodes because it was their first show, and they wanted to. I was the one to come up with it. They said, pitch some new characters that will revitalize the shows, and I pitched them Space Duck. Did not go. Bubba Duck, which they took exactly my drawing and the name. And then I said, and of course, there was a big hit from last year, RoboDuck. Of course, the year before was RoboCop came out. They instantly liked that. He was even named Fenton Crackshell. But that's about all I did on it. And, you know, the writers of the series really made him into something. But I totally forgot what your original question was.
The 65 episodes, you went.
Oh, yeah.
Quite
so anyway, that was intentionally saying, we have a second season, we're doing more episodes. And that was like the last time they did that, because really they realized that you only need, at the time, 65 episodes, which gives you 13 weeks of five shows, and then you just recycle them over and over. So it was just, animation was... obviously, and still is, you know, expensive. With that many, you could keep rerunning them, and instead of doing more episodes of a show, you do a new show. Mm. And of course, if you sooner or later you're going to get a merchandising hit.
Sure.
But even if you have a minor thing with like coloring books, now you have a new set of characters who coloring books and stuff like that. Anyway, the difference with Darkwing is we were going to do 65, but then ABC wanted 13 episodes. And the sweet thing for me was, and for them, is they got to pick from shows that were all but done, shows that were in story reel, and then finished scripts. Mm. The nice thing for me, and, you know, we didn't show them everything because we couldn't let them take all the best shows. The nice thing for me is they tried to give notes, and we said, nope. That's the deal. These are done. You just take them or leave them.
Before Disney and ABC,
yeah, exactly.
The same company,
yeah.
So it was. You know, it's based. You know, if you find something objectionable in that one, then take a different episode. You know, and they just put them on fine. But then the second season, they still want another 13, and that one I had to take notes on. So that was. I mean, we still did great stories and. The only difference was really for the bulk of the show, if I had some whim or my story editors came up with a crazy idea, we could just do it. We didn't have people saying you couldn't, you know, move forward on something.
Right. So after 91 episodes, how – this is where Aaron kind of comes into the picture with James. How do you get in contact with Tad and go, hey, listen, I want to do Darkwing Duck in the comic books? How does that go? How does that happen?
Well, it's interesting. When we set out to do Darkwing, like from the day that I came in to Boom Studios, who had the license, they had just obtained the Disney license at the time. And I came in and they said, okay, well, we're going to hire you. You're going to be the editor and you're going to basically plan out this line of Disney comics. We've got Pixar. We've got Muppets. We're doing this stuff. And I said, well, and they said, we're doing Disney standards characters. And I said, well, which characters fall under that license? And they said, well, basically all of these. And I immediately said, can I do Darkwing Duck? And they asked me, what is that? And so so after I explained that and was told, it kind of sounds like a nostalgia thing. We don't really get it. We don't think anyone will be interested. Just concentrate on Mickey and Donald and these other things. We did that for a while, but I kept pushing for Darkwing. And eventually, I think maybe they just got tired of listening to me talk about it, right, or draw him while we were in meetings. So they said, all right, you can have 4 issues. But I was forbidden to talk to Tad. And it was funny because David Peterson, who's an amazing artist who does a little book you may have heard of called Mouse Guard, he was one of my artists on – he did the Muppet covers for me. And he was on the server one day and he saw that I had had a Darkwing Duck cover up there that I had commissioned from James. And he called me and he said, are you guys doing Darkwing Duck? And I said, you know, David, I can't talk about it. But yes, we are. and he said, well, I know Tad Stones, the creator of Dark. And I was like, I know who Tad Stones is. And he says, well, I can put you in contact with him. And I said, okay. I said, but you can't, I actually can't talk to him until we actually announce the book.
Wow.
Because Boom had jumped the gun, I guess, in announcing that they were doing Don Rosa material without first contacting Don Rosa. And so Don had a few things to say about that. So they were kind of wary. They thought maybe, you know, well, we don't want this Tad Stones guy freaking out. And you know,
Don can be a little prickly.
Take away the Lee.
So
you heard it here first on Nerd Watch.
It's not me, Don. It's not me.
Nerd!
So when we announced the book, I contacted Tad and he was gracious and I said, well, you know, let's meet for dinner, and Tad was very gracious to do so. And
I thought first he said, who's buying?
I think he did say that. I think we said we'll take you out to dinner.
Free food?
Yeah. Okay. And by the way, I paid for that meal. There was no like corporate Boom account that was like, yes, take Tad Stones out for a meal, wine him and dine him.
No, take the black card.
The Marvel black card.
That's right. So I went with Ian Brill, who was working on the book with me at the time, because I wasn't technically allowed to write it, as they, you know, still did a huge amount of work on it, but I wasn't allowed to turn in like the script the way that I wanted it, but
right.
It was fine. I was editor. I could guide it the way that I wanted, so I wasn't worried about it. But we went and we met with Tad, and Tad was amazing and just full of advice. Like I came away the story really changed. The
right.
first story that we had in mind, which was the Duck Knight Return, changed in some substantial ways after meeting with Tad, because Tad was very adamant that we understood that Goslin was the heart of the show and that Goslin drives a lot of the action, and just, you know, knowing some of the history behind
right.
it and how the show sold and things like that really crystallized in my mind the kind of book that we wanted to do. So, but we still went back to the office and pretended that Tad was insane.
Right.
Because everybody was like waiting with bated breath, and we were like, oh, this guy, I don't know. He said he created Mickey. Then after about a half hour, he said he created us. And everybody in the office is like, what? Is this going to be a problem? We're like, no, we're totally kidding. He's great. So, yeah, that's basically
cool.
the first meeting that we had.
Was James, Mr. Silvani, was he the first guy in your head when you were thinking, this is the guy I want as my artist on this comic?
Well, you know what? You want to tell the story, James, of how I ended up hiring you on Darkwing?
Go ahead.
It was a dark and stormy night.
I had taken a creative writing course.
I had just finished my course on If You Can Draw Timmy. Aaron and I first got to know each other when we were doing the Muppets comics for Boom Studios. I was doing one of the Muppet storybooks, Muppet King Arthur. And I had... turned in some work that Aaron seemed to like for some reason. Mm-hmm. And he said, by the way, why don't we see if you could get some covers going for some other projects we have in mind. So he had me turn in an Incredibles cover, Finding Nemo cover. And then he goes, just for shits and giggles, why don't you throw in a Darkwing Duck cover too? It's just, you know, it's just
why not?
Why would I ask that?
And of course, then I said, who?
You did not.
No, because I all my life I've been a huge Disney Ducks fan, so that was it was a thrill, and so I did what I could remember of Darkwing Duck because I couldn't find any reference online, I didn't have any comics or anything to draw any reference from, so I did a sketch for him, and a couple of weeks went by. I didn't hear anything, and I was getting ready to do another Muppet storybook. We were going to do Muppet Snow White
with Jesse Blaise Snyder. You were the original artist assigned to that.
And he goes, Aaron calls me up one day, and he said, "You know what? We're going to chip you over to another book. There, we're going to put you on the Darkwing Duck comics." And I was like, "I don't want to do more Muppets." But he convinced me, and they let me do some the covers for the series, for the Muppet ones, and I started on Darkwing, and I tell you, I've never had so much fun drawing. I've done my first comics that I started on back in the 90s were Animaniacs and Pinky and the Brain comics.
Oh,
and those were fun. But there was a very strict, rigid kind of corporate.
Because Warner Brothers.
Yeah, because it was all under Warner Brothers Publishing, and not DC directly. And when I got to these, I always loved Darkwing because it was Disney comics. It was Disney Ducks with a Warner Brothers sensibility. And then I got to draw these things. I got to draw anvils and...
Oh, cool. You know.
The only thing that was the big difference between the show back when it was originally on and comic standards nowadays, we could get away with the real, real cartoony stuff like pianos falling and things like that, but we couldn't do guns, which was part of the show at the time.
Interesting.
Yeah, we couldn't. Well, we could do them inside, couldn't we? Or just,
no.
Just not on the cover. Oh, we couldn't do guns that fired bullets.
Yeah.
It had to be
they had to fire knives and acid and things like that.
Wow. Yeah.
Which are so much more safe and sane.
Correct.
What about the tagline, "Let's get dangerous"? Like, do they still let you guys do that?
He still gets dangerous, yes. And actually, you know what's funny is on the most recent series that we're doing with Joe Books, the question did come back at one point, not from Disney, but from our editor that said, "We might want to change 'suck gas, evildoer.' It sounds like it sounds like something else." And then I had to come back and say, "No, it he says that on the show," and then it was like, "Oh, okay. Well, if he says it on the show, then we're fine." Oh,
cool. Well, listen, we only have a few more minutes with Mr. Stone, so before we let him go, Todd Bernardi or Alika. Do you have any questions for Mr. Stone before he has to jet on out of here back to California?
I'm going to let Todd ask a question.
All right, Todd, you go ahead, sir. All right. It may be a little long-winded, Ted, but he'll get through it.
No. It's going to be really quick because I know you got to get out of here. But what was the what were the earlier animation projects you did before you got to Disney, to Disney television?
I started Disney in features, actually, on the original Rescuers. Well, I mean, you have a training program where you do – you know, test, and as you're trying to survive and learn animation, you have to, you know, do a test to prove that you know how to do the thing that you're currently learning. And then you become an in-betweener, and I sucked at being an in-betweener and came near to being fired.
You were the in-betweener? You fought Galactus in an issue of Silver Surfer.
Nerd alert!
You know, but it's appropriate. As we sit here on Nerd Watch!
Thank you, sir. Thank
anyway, you, I expect more people coming in on things like that.
Yeah, I got you.
No, we'll pause.
You've got it covered.
All right. So I was on the Rescuers. Eventually, then you only get ahead by doing personal tests in your spare time.
So you were cutting your teeth at this time?
I mean, during the day, you're in-betweening.
Okay.
And that, because you're actually doing the work, you are learning animation because you're working with an animator. And actually, I came to Disney like 4 or 5 months after Ron Clements, you know, the director.
Oh, okay.
And then I worked for Ron, poor Ron. He had to redo most of the stuff. And then I was doing personal tests, but I kept on getting better ideas and keep doing them. And, you know, time went by, and the manager of the department came by, mm-hmm. and I asked him to come in and look at a test on film. I said, you know, this is an old test. I was thinking of going back to it and finishing it off and showing the review board. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's worth it? And he said, no, this looks great just as it is. And I said, oh, great, you know. And then he said, yeah, we'd kind of given up on you. You think you could have mentioned that in maybe like a six-month review meeting or something? And anyway,
Security was on its way downstairs.
I was made assistant animator. I actually did animate one little scene of Bernard Mouse turning around looking at a clock in the movie. But that's when I realized I was having more fun and was more interested in figuring out what the characters did instead of animating them doing
the
it. I kept on having better ideas, and that's kind of the definition of story. And I was able to eventually shift over to story. I worked, again, uncredited, also on Fox and Hound, boarding some sequences. First, reboarding a sequence that already had animation done to it.
Jeez.
But and then the next one was original. And then, really, just to go through the career real quick, they had me do an educational short subject, health and alcohol abuse.
By Disney.
How to? Yeah.
And it was,
that reminds me. Can I get another beer?
And it was animated in New Zealand by a guy who used to be John Lounsbury's assistant, who was one of the nine old men of Disney, the classic animators. Then that got me over to Imagineering, where I worked on the creation of Epcot with Ward Kimball.
Goodness,
another one of the
minor
men in a tiny little room for 9 months, you know, creating this audio animatronic show.
Wow.
Then I did the Space Pavilion. You'll notice there is no Space Pavilion. but I got to meet George Lucas. That was fun. And then did the Imagination Pavilion with Tony Baxter, who was like one of the key designers of both on the Epcot projects, and he was the chief designer of Disneyland at that time.
Wow.
Then I went back to features. Actually, I was supposed to do Epcot documentaries, and all the networks said, we have our own news departments to do low-rated documentaries. We don't need to, you know, put on Epcot documentaries. Ended up back in features, and that, you know, was just actually developing a new one, didn't go. And that's when Michael Eisner came in, and just everything changed. And the first – I had worked for somewhere in there, worked with people over in licensing who wanted animation to sell toys. And I did a thing that started off as Sport Goofy and also pitched a Mickey and the Space Pirates, which didn't go.
That still sounds cool.
And, well, what happened is Eisner came in, and at the end of his first week at Disney – he had a meeting about TV animation. I got a call at home, and they said, we know you're on vacation. We know it's the weekend, but would you mind coming to Michael Eisner's house on Sunday? I said, yeah, sure, you know.
Free food?
So they, actually, I don't think they fed us.
He had all the gummy bears you could eat.
Anyway, there was about 10 of us there, and it was Michael Eisner, Frank Wells, and it really – Eisner started in animation at ABC,
yeah.
You know, and actually takes partial credit, at least, for the creation of Scooby-Doo. who knows? But that's what he does take credit for. Anyway, he said
he put the glasses on Velma.
Yeah, exactly. The sweater should be orange.
That's gold.
Yeah. Anyway, he said Disney is a top name in animation. We should be everywhere animation is. Mm-hmm. And it's not like TV animation has to look like feature animation, but it should be the best on TV. Yeah. So we pitched things, and I brought up Mickey and the Space Pirates, and they thought it was really neat. But then he said, no, we have to save Mickey to make sure we can do this. He's too precious. He's an icon. So he had respect for, you know, what we were doing and the characters. anyway, some other things were talked and just kind of got the general feel. And this, the reason why I was invited to the meeting is some of those same licensing people, because, again, they knew to sell plush toys and animals. Right. They had to, you know, have cartoons to support it. Because features at that time only came out once every 5 years.
Right, right.
So they were trying to generate more. Anyway, I ended up going over to TV animation, and it was a good fit for me because over my career at Disney up to that point, it seemed like my job changed every 2 years.
See where you work.
I mean, I was like,
see where this guy works.
I was like, yeah, I was an in-betweener, and then assistant, and then story, and then educational film, then Epcot, and helping out on TV. And but at TV animation, your show changes about all that time.
Right.
So it was a great fit for me, and I was there till like 2003.
Well, Ted, listen. It is, I could pick your brain for another hour and a half here. I wanted to ask you about your inspirations of your for your animation style.
But then you miss his flight.
But then you miss your flight. And I don't want you to do that on my account. It is truly an honor to have you here. Quite the legend to have on the Nerd Watch. We really appreciate it.
Oh, I think you pause a little more so we all go, Nerd Watch!
That is. Mr. Stones, it's been an absolute pleasure and an honor to have you at the con and here at the show. We would love to have you back sometime whenever you're in town, and we'd love to pick your brain just a little bit more.
Thank you so much, Ted.
Yeah, we certainly appreciate it. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back in just a few minutes. We're going to be sticking around with Aaron and James. He's going to go drop off Mr. Stones at the airport. James will be back for a little while longer, so stay tuned right here. This is only part one of the show right here on the
Nerd Watch!
Welcome back, everybody, for the second half of the Nerd Watch podcast this week. We, of course, are hot off the heels of Maui Comic Con, the first annual Maui Comic Con. We got about a few more minutes left. We're here with the writer of Darkwing Duck, the comic book, Aaron Sparrow, the artist extraordinaire, James Savani, in the house. We've gotten rid of Tad Stones, and in his place is a very big gentleman, and that's Format, our gaming guru. Okay. Todd Bernardi is here as well, and the man responsible for all of the goodness that happened this weekend at the Maui Comic Con, Alika, the chairman of the comic book board, is here tonight as well. So, let's get back into the conversation that we were having about how you have – how much you love living or would love to live out here when you're telling us off the air.
Oh, Mr. Sparrow. this is paradise. I love every time I get a chance to visit out here, and I love how warm and friendly everybody is, how welcoming the community is, and we really saw a lot of that out at Maui Comic Con. So I'm hoping that it is the first annual Maui Comic Con, and it becomes a tradition.
And no matter what cost, we'll make it.
Yeah.
Well, too fun for us.
Well, listen, you guys, we talked a lot about Darkwing Duck. What I'd like to do is talk a little bit more about the both of you and your other interests, or what other things you may be working on other than the Darkwing. We know we celebrated his 25th anniversary at Maui Comic Con. What other projects are you guys working on? What other things should we be looking forward to?
Oh, there's nothing else. It's just Darkwing. Please, for the love of God, buy Darkwing Duck, because it's all we have.
I'll take two copies, please.
You broke a guest.
Yeah, I did. I broke a guest. I can't believe I did. I broke a guest.
No, wait, you know
what? What do you mean, we pale face?
Yeah, I was just kind of curious.
Get me on a Batman book or something.
Well, because we were off the air while we were on part one, we did a little pause in between. Found out that Mr. Sparrow here is. Has his and I say this, no pun intended, he had his hands in some anime, some very risque anime. I had no idea.
Manga.
Excuse me.
Makes me sound way more.
It's popular. Anime you read.
That's right. It's anime that you read.
So. It's like anime, but in a book.
Right. So you obviously have worked on some very interesting projects. What are the subject matters that interest you that go, ooh, I really want to do that?
It's funny. when I first was like, oh, I want to work in comics someday, you know, and you have that dream, you know, you think that, oh, you know, you'll go to Marvel or you'll go to DC or...
But only those two.
Yeah. But I've found that I actually enjoy working on the Disney stuff. I enjoy working on kids' books, things that hopefully are bringing kids into the industry and, you know, helping them develop the lifelong love of comics that that I did. You know, I started off with when I was a kid. I'd read a few Star Wars comics that my grandmother had brought me, but I didn't really get hooked until I was visiting my great-grandmother, and she said, oh, the neighbor brought over this big box of comics for you. And it was just a box full of Archie Digests and DC Sugar and Spike. And then from there, I started reading, like, G.I. Joe, and someone turned... And I saw these ads in some of the G.I. Joe Marvel books that were for this book called The X-Men. And it just looked really interesting to me. So I started picking that up. I started picking up Chris Claremont's X-Men. And, I mean, I was hooked. And from there, I got into the rest of the Marvel Universe. And it wasn't until maybe 89 when the Batman book came out that I started picking up some Batman books. And then Batman introduced me to the rest of DC. So I was buying a ton of books. You know, I had a pretty severe comics habit up until, you know, every week up until recently. Yeah, if you don't want your kids doing drugs, get them hooked on comics because they won't be able to afford drugs.
Okay, so I have a very troll-worthy question for both of you.
Yes.
Marvel or DC?
That's not troll-worthy.
Yeah, I think
everyone asks that.
I bounced back and forth. Before the New 52, I was probably reading more DC than Marvel. Mm-hmm. And then the New 52 happened, and I tried it out for probably about the first 8 months. I bought every book for maybe like 6 to 8 months. And I just got to a point where I decided that it wasn't my DC universe anymore. It wasn't the universe that I recognized. And I lost interest in it. I didn't have that fanboy rage, you know. I just moved on.
There was a lot of that rage going around.
There was. And, you know, I just decided, like, hey, it didn't erase all the stories that I loved. It didn't erase the characters that I loved. I still had all that. But this new DC universe wasn't mine anymore. So it was for someone else. So I walked away from it. And then... And then, you know, so throughout my life, I've bounced back and forth depending on who I thought had the better books at the time. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I started reading a lot of independents. Of course, Image publishes a huge amount of amazing books. There's books by, you know, small guys like Action Lab. Aftershock Comics does some really
great stuff. Aftershock has had some, like, their cover art is incredible. Like,
they've got some big names over there.
Yeah, this year they've... their run of covers is like basically sold all their comics. Like people are just looking at the catalog, which is only covers.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even describe the books, but people are like, "I want that."
Yeah, and they've got some great talent over there. You know, you've got Amanda Connor, you've got Jimmy Palmiotti, Marguerite Bennett. You know, some people that are writing some really amazing books. So now I'm more an independent reader. I'm super excited to grab that book back there before I leave the new issue of Thor with The Unworthy Thor by Jason Aaron, because I love his Thor stuff, but mostly independents nowadays.
Interesting. That that should make one of our panelists happy.
What are you trying to say?
I wasn't going to name any names, but...
Saying Marvel rule.
Time. You know what? I buy all the Marvel Legends. I mean, I'm a Marvel guy through and through. You know, I buy a lot of DC toys, too. I'm mostly a toy guy at this point. Because you know, I got the toys. I can have my own adventures. I don't need to read Civil War II if I can make my own.
You're a writer. You're like,
yeah. If I can have my own adventure, my Civil War II has the DC guys and He-Man. So, yeah.
So James, as an artist, do you? I mean, I don't know if it's a fair question, the Marvel or DC question, but as an artist, do you look at that kind of competition differently? Like, oh man, I could draw Superman so much better than that, or man, this is beautiful. Or is that healthy competition in, you know?
You know, to me, as far as the first question goes, I hate to say it, and as somebody in the industry, this is horrible for me to say, but when it comes to DC or Marvel comics, it's neither. I am like Aaron. I read so much non-superhero stuff. My favorite books are Bone, The Goon.
Oh, nice.
The Goon is awesome.
Guest of Comic-Con, inker for Fables, you know, Steve, mm-hmm.
Steve Leola.
I love Fables when it was going. Superheroes are just not my thing anymore, except for in the other mediums. Like when it comes to movies, Marvel. Marvel all the way. That is, they're fantastic.
Yeah, there's no
when it comes to the perfect superhero book or perfect superhero medium for me was the DC Animated Universe. Batman animated
yes.
series.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Agreed.
Through Justice League Unlimited. You will never
Young
be...
Young Justice coming back.
Yeah, that's right. just announced. Just Young Justice coming back, but... Through
congratulations,
me.
Greg.
Yeah.
And Greg almost came out for the...
Greg did...
Maui,
yeah, Greg Greg wanted to come out for Maui Comic Con, but he was booked for BlizzCon that weekend because of his recent Blizzard novel that you can buy in bookstores now.
Yeah, and now that Young Justice is coming out for third season, we're never going to see him.
Yeah.
He's going to be too busy.
So you it's just the love of comics for you, or the love of, like you said, Marvel movies or...
Yeah.
DC it, animated, but Marvel
DC
live
DC animated.
Yeah, those two things. But art-wise, I mean, even the art style of the DC animated was so... The greatest Batman comics for me were the ones that they based on the DC animated.
The Adventures.
Templeton and Mike Parabek.
Mike Parabek, Rick Burchett.
Yeah.
That stuff was just... That was Batman to me. That was because it was simple storytelling, simple writing, just simple, good stories. Right. And I have not seen a Batman comic I have enjoyed as much since then.
So, as an artist, who, when you were growing up in the business or as a kid, do you remember the artists and or the writers that inspired your work that you do?
I have three specific influences which will shape the rest of my career, and I'll never forget. It's of course Carl Barks doing from the Uncle Scrooge and Donald Duck comics from back in the. Back in the day, I used to just read those Gold Key collections by the ton.
And you guys are saying that there's the Big Seven for Disney of their characters, and Uncle Scrooge, Carl Barks' creation, was the only one that's not a Walt Disney creation on the Big Seven.
Yeah, I mean, of course, owned by Walt Disney. It's always going to say Walt Disney.
Yeah,
right,
Scrooge,
right, of course.
Yeah,
yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
But not created by...
Yeah, a character that started in the comics and translated over.
Yeah. One of my other big influences was a Silver Age artist. He mostly is known for war comics and cowboy western comics, but I got to know him through his parody movie parodies in Cracked Magazine, which was John Severin.
Yep.
Yes, I've loved it. That's the only reason why I read Cracked was
that's
Cracked
why
because of those.
Covers were
awesome.
There was like. There'd be Jack Davis at Mad doing the photorealistic stuff, and then you'd have Severin at Cracked doing.
Yeah,
I used to love when they would do Cracked the movie.
Uh-huh.
You know,
yeah,
and, you know,
I was always a guy who loved Mad Magazine, and I only gravitated to Cracked because of those movie parodies because those were great.
Yeah, and the artwork for me as the artist for someone because with Mad Magazine they were always caricatured, you know, like the real wacky Mort Drucker,
right.
Like Jack
Davis,
stuff.
Yeah, that kind of stuff, but. But Severin just had this subtlety where he was drawing a character, not a caricature. And that,
interesting.
And it was just the acting was so subtle and the character motion and things like that. And then he would just put in these ridiculous sound effects that, you know, that like Don Martin kind of sound. You know, you remember Don Martin from Mad Magazine, those kind of sound effects. But with Severin's stuff, it was just so subtle. And it just made me laugh, and I get those sensibilities. There's one artist that works these days which I think has that kind of sensibility where I just get his artwork, and that's someone we've actually both worked with, Roger Langridge. Actually, I haven't worked with him directly, but Aaron edited him on the Muppet Show comics. He actually won an Eisner for...
He did indeed.
...for the Muppet Show comics, and these were published by Boom Studios. He's a New Zealand... cartoonist, but he lives in England right now.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote the most famous for the Mighty Thor or Thor the Mighty Avenger comics with who did the artwork on that?
I can't remember. I
think. Chris.
It's right on the
Samney. No,
Samney.
Yeah, Chris Samney. They won an Eisner for that too, didn't they?
I don't know.
Anyway. But that's what for his writing. But his artwork to me is such. He's I think the greatest. Working cartoonist these days.
Crazy. So that, and who's the last, so was that the last one you had?
I would say as far as, you know, going back and then somebody in the, that works in the modern times is.
Interesting.
Yeah. And also, I mean, you know, Eric Powell for The Goon is unbelievable. Mike Mignola, you know, when Tad was in here, he directed the Hellboy animated.
That's right. Did he do two of the movies?
Yeah, they did two of those. Yeah, I mean, you know, 20 years ago, Art Adams is. I mean, there are artists that I will buy just for the artwork. Book comics that I buy just for the artwork.
Right.
And then as far as guys who are working nowadays, I was just looking at your comic there, the Stuart Immonen. I mean, anything he draws, I'll buy. Because it's
Empress.
So, but I love the Star Wars comics.
Are these the same guys that you go, man, I love these guys, and you're like, God, I hate these guys. It's so good.
You know, this is an argument I have with a lot of other artists in the industry. Not necessarily an argument, but to me, there is talent and skill when it comes to art,
right?
Or anything, really. You look at an Adam Hughes, or you look at a Stuart Immonen, or you look at a Mike Mignola, or something like that. To me, that's talent. It looks so effortless, and I look at that and I go, I'll never be able to do that in my life. I think I have a skill, whereas I practice what I do a long time, and I can, you know, make believable ducks and capes on the page.
Well,
there,
your commissions are incredible because
they are.
Because at a con, someone's coming at you and can you do me Mickey Mouse's Darth Vader cutting off the hand of and like somehow you make it actually work? Like
that's just sick.
And he makes it funny.
All I know is
Mickey
that
would never do that.
You are James is underselling his art because it is. Yeah. I mean, by any standard, is superior to anything that anybody could match. I mean, I look at it in awe because I look at things that I can't do, and what he does is just – it just –
Well, I appreciate that, and I'm not trying to put what I do down.
I mean, I think that you're one of – you know, I think you're a modern duck master.
Well,
you know, and what?
Well, thank you.
I mean, that's I'm not actually trying to make a joke, but I think that, you know,
what are you doing later?
When you look at your Carl Barks, your Don Rosas, you know, at people who have carried the torch on these duck comics for years and years and years, I think that, you know, your name will be one that's held up and you know, compared and you know, you just do amazing work. So.
How many of these have you had?
It's election night, so 14. Yeah.
So same question for you, Aaron. Are there guys out there that you, as a writer, I mean, do you go, man, why couldn't I have come up with that idea? Like, it's brilliant. Do you have any inspirations like that when you write?
It's funny because I started out wanting to be an artist. And then I was discouraged at an early age, so I stopped drawing.
Well, thank you for doing all those drawing commissions, by the way, during the con.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, you know, writers always get so insulted when someone's like, can you sketch something? You know, because like, I'm a writer. I don't sketch things. Yeah. But you're, like, happy to do the sketches.
Robert Kirkman hates those questions.
You know who I learned that from? I learned that from Mark Waid. I took long before I ever worked with Waid at Boom Studios.
This guy's a name dropper.
Yes. No. I mean,
well, when me and Kanye were working on our new album,
we're dropping an album next week.
That's right. You know, when I lose at the Eisners next year for best humor series, I'm gonna get up and be like, I'm gonna let you finish. But no, my brother and I. We're reading Mark Waid's run on Captain America before it became Heroes Reborn, and they truncated the series, and we were absolutely in love with it. And I remember I took my brother to San Diego Comic-Con, and we walked up to Mark Waid, and he was signing with Ron Garney. You know, Ron Garney was the artist on the book. And my brother asked him, can you draw Captain America's shield on the cover? And Waid just went, and you just saw him deflate. Like, man, I don't know. But, you know, and my brother knew he was the writer, but he just wanted him to doodle something because you're Mark Waid and you write this book that I really like. And Waid, to his credit, told him, I'm not an artist, but I'm going to do my best. And started to draw Captain America's shield and kept turning to Ron and going, am I doing this right? Am I doing this right? And Ron was giving him pointers, and he drew a damn good shield. So, you know, if you come to a show and you want me to doodle a character, I can't do everybody, but I'll do who I can.
What is that character's name? The Hydro Dog? The
Liquidator.
Liquidator.
Yeah.
Right, you do a mean Liquidator.
Yeah, well, Liquidator's kind of easy. He's kind of, you know, he's got a lot of really fluid. Aha, fluid lines. So, you know, I started I've kind of like taken this off the rails, but, you know, I started out drawing like my own little Garfield comics.
Oh.
And they were super serious. It was like
they just get dark, like, of course.
Yes, it was like
I hate Mondays because that's when I kill.
Yeah. So it was, you know, I did like these Caped Avengers comics, and I created all these characters to go along with it. And then when I stopped drawing, and I decided that, you know, maybe writing was more the direction that I needed to go in, there's a lot of different influences. Steve Purcell, who did Sam and Max and works at Pixar now, huge influence on, you know, not only my comic sensibilities, but my sense of humor. Obviously, the work of Tad Stones and the Disney all the Disney Afternoon shows, you know, the Carl Barks comics, you know, and then just a million other things, you know, that like, I feel like bad because I can't, you know, sit here and name everybody. But, you know, I've loved so many different comics over the years. You know, Chris Claremont's run on X-Men and, you know, the Avengers issues and Ditko's Doctor Strange and, you know, all these different things that have like kind of contributed to, you know, the things that I love. But I would say if I picked the two biggest, it would be Steve Purcell and Tad Stones.
Crazy. We had an opportunity to interview Chris Claremont, and that guy is fascinating. Utterly fascinating. He's talked about his run on X-Men. He talked about his new projects that he's got. That guy, you would
and
never.
He's nonstop, too.
And he is. He's, you know, at his.
Goes on and on and on. It's crazy. Not. And
he's like, no spring chicken. This guy's got things
so much
going on in his head that you're going, what? Where is that coming from? You just, it's crazy.
When do you sleep?
It shocks me every time I talk to comic book writers like yourself, Aaron. I'm like, these ideas just, they just come and they come and they come. And I'm like, you know, like you said, it was talking about waking up in the middle of the night and you gotta start writing something down because something just pops in your head in the middle of a dream or something. It's crazy.
Speaking of awesome ideas, the most recent issue that you just had exclusively at Maui Comic Con, the issue 6 of Darkwing Duck, which takes place at the convention.
Yes.
That was a stroke of genius.
Yeah, St. Canard. What was the full name of it?
The St. Canard Comic Expo Festorama or something like that.
Well, listen, we almost have to get out of here, but before we do, I would like to pass off a few questions to my my counterparts here.
Oh, I thought we were going to do like another hour.
Alika. Or no, well, for the television portion, we can set that aside. But for Alika or for Todd or for Format, if they had any questions for, of course, Mr. Silvani or Mr. Sparrow.
I'm just honored to be sitting at the same table.
That is true. That is very true.
Oh, talk to us for a few more minutes. You'll lose that.
Because if you don't have any questions, what I wanted to do was have you guys critique Todd Bernardi's Kukui project?
Because he's getting tired of hearing us critique it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I can't take any more constructive criticism from these guys.
It becomes destructive criticism.
What I find fascinating
is... You have got to be shitting me, Pyle, and then they laugh at your tears.
Yeah. It's mostly that.
Yeah. It's mostly that. What I find fascinating about what you guys do is that you just keep finding these ideas and you put them out on paper. You send them to James, and James is like, I'm going to just put them in the panels of these comics. And it just seems to... It's like a natural thing for you guys. I don't know. Where does that discipline come from? Just that
Twitter.
I'm not good at anything else.
You're not good at anything.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, I think it comes from spending a lot of your time in a fantasy world. You know, and so you know, I'm always just thinking of different things and thinking about story. And I
got to say, one of the best things about collaborating with Adam, Aaron,
with Adam. Whoever the hell this is.
How many of these have you had?
I just woke up and there's this new guy right here. working with Aaron is that, you know, I come up with ideas too for some of the gags and the actual storylines of the books, and he's like, well, yeah, that actually works.
He's not precious with his stuff.
No, we're it is a truly collaborative
right.
kind of,
which is why if you look at the, and you know, in the I was insistent when we did the new series because it is such a collaborative process, and you know, having worked with people who are really precious about like, no, I'm the writer and I have indulged you enough, you know, kind of like attitude. If you look in the credits of any Darkwing book, it's not listed writer Aaron Sparrow, artist James Silvani. It's just we're just both listed as storytellers.
Cool.
Which is
so then you must have been really bummed at how we billed you on the Maui Comic Con.
Oh no, I was fine. I mean, that's fine
because you were strictly the writer.
That's what I do, and at least then people don't come up expecting me to do a good drawing.
are there any moments when you're like, no,
Right? Or any,
when James came to me and he wanted Launchpad to say, we participated in a genocide. Yeah, save that one for the Flintstones.
Or are there any phone calls that James goes, you know, Aaron?
I get one every now and then, and he's like, so. 9 panels on this page, huh? Okay.
9 panels I can handle. 18.
But you know, the other thing about the collaborative process with James is, you know, I give him my script, and my scripts are detailed in the sense that they're not done Marvel style. You know, I break it down. I break down panel story beats, and I break down, you know, moments and things like that. But James has, you know, he's the one who's got to draw it. So he has complete control over how the visual aspect is, so he'll call me and he'll be like, hey, you know, this had like 6 panels, but I can get it done in 4, you know, if I do this. And it's like, oh great, go for it, you know, you're the one who's got to figure it out. I just kind of write down how I see
believe me, we're not paid by the panel.
I am, you didn't know.
You need to renegotiate.
I get it done in 1 if I could.
Well, the All-Splash page book is back soon.
I'm on that issue right
Well,
now.
Listen, gentlemen, our television portion of the show has come to an end. I really appreciate Mr. Aaron Sparrow and James Silvani being a part of our program this evening. It has been absolutely enlightening and very fun and interesting, and we'd love to have you back anytime. James is welcome back all the time because, of course, he lives here. And anyway...
All right, I'll be here tomorrow. See
you right. Tomorrow. But Aaron, you're
sweet. You can help us unload the.
You're flying out of here, and then I hope you're back sooner rather than later.
Yeah, well, any excuse to come back to Maui. Just hope that people hire me for comics projects, and then I can afford to fly back.
Fantastic.
Awesome. We'll fly you out for the con anyway.
Absolutely. Big shout out, of course, to Aaron Sparrow and James Silvani for taking the time to talk to us peons. We really appreciate it. Of course, you can follow us on Facebook.com/TheNerdWatch. You can, of course...
What was that again?
Facebook.com/...
The Nerd Watch!
Of course, you can follow us on Twitter at NerdWatchNation. And by the way, not just us, where can we follow you, Mr. Sparrow and Mr. Silvani? Where can they see you online?
All my social media is Silvani Art. SILVANIART. So Facebook, Instagram, Twitter... Tumblr.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what about you, Mr. Sparrow?
I am just Aaron Sparrow, AaronSparrow on Instagram, or Aaron_Sparrow on Twitter.
Twitter.
You're a furious Twitter user.
Yeah.
Furious? Is that the right word?
I was just witnessing
a tweet storm.
Yeah. No, I'm not furious as in angry, but yeah, just furious as in
the hustle.
Yeah, I just say a lot of ridiculous things, and hopefully people laugh.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure having you guys on here. Please follow them on their social medias, and we cannot wait to do this next week. Next week on the show, we're going to have a Comic-Con in review about the Maui Comic-Con, which will be a lot of fun. So for Alika, for Todd Bernardi, for Format, for myself, G Money, and our two very special guests, Aaron Sparrow and James Silvani, peace out, much love, and most assuredly, always stay nerdy. And until next week, we say to you guys,
Aloha!